Welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom. And with me is a man who laughs in the face of adversity and thinks that the humble cauliflower is a sinister vegetable. It can only be Silent Dave Hutchinson. On the menu tonight, we have the game against the UK's answer to Monaco. Yes, it's newly promoted Bournemouth with that natty dresser, that dedicated follower of fashion, Scott Parker.
It will make or break you, so he's got to buy the best, 'cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion.
We have all the details with Connor in an upbeat Gonna Get Into It. There's no Lauren this week due to technical issues, but she'll be raring to go for Podcast 64 with a potpourri of WSL. We have an unsavoury football prank from former Newcastle right-back Andy Griffin. Dirty boy, does your mother know what you get up to? Yes, we go deeper than the Daily Mail, but not nearly as deep as Panorama. We round up the latest Arsenal news, dip into the archives and tell you who held on to the FA Cup, our cup, for 7 years. 7 years, podders! I'm in the gun room with Jay and Mitch to pick over the game and give our unbiased, balanced opinion. We answer your emails and we pick our man of the match. There's no Paul this week. He's out on a football jolly, but he'll be back next pod. We reveal the biggest feat in football. This is what they want and cover the top 10 fan rituals. You've done quite a few of those, Dave, haven't you? Remember drinking out of that policeman's helmet in 1977? You should be ashamed, sir. Not smiling and laughing. You should be ashamed. Have you still got it? He's still got it. Strap in. Ready to go? Of course you are.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
From the archives, I'm almost frightened to ask for some suitable music, Dave. It was almost inevitable, really, wasn't it? This month in 1977, Pat Jennings signed for £45,000. He played 591 games for Tottenham. But his club seemed to think at 32, he was too old to continue. Pat, come on, come in, take a goalpost. It's also this month that Laurent Koscielny left Arsenal to join Bordeaux for a reported £4.6 million transfer fee. Koscielny had spent 9 years at Arsenal, playing 255 times, but that shirt business, what were you thinking of, sir? Jimmy Rimmer played his last game v Aldershot in a pre-season friendly, having played 124 league games before moving to Aston Villa. Theo Walcott became the youngest player to play a match in a European competition, playing against Dinamo Zagreb. He was 17 years and 129 days old. Right, it's time for Connor and gonna get into it with his match report. Bournemouth versus Arsenal from the Vitality Stadium. What a match it turned out to be.
Dose of your Gonna Get Into It match report here, and it's an Arsenal Thing podcast, and it keeps getting better and better as far as Arsenal are concerned. Another win, another sensational Gabriel Jesus performance, another Granit Xhaka assist, and another headline-grabbing William Saliba display. Another beautifully stylish win for the Arsenal. We're now 2 points clear at the top of the table after Pep's City were held to a pulsating 3-3 draw by Eddie Howe's Newcastle United. I know it's early days, very early days, but we have two extremely winnable games in the next 10 days or so. Two home games against Fulham and Aston Villa, so surely we'll still be 2 points clear come the start of September. I don't care if there have only been a few games played and the fact it's only 2 points, it still feels so good that Manchester City are currently chasing us. That's right, Manchester City are chasing the Arsenal. We're top of the pile. And well, on Saturday, we visited Scott Parker's newly promoted Bournemouth at the Vitality Stadium in the late kickoff on Saturday evening, where Mikel Arteta once again named the same starting 11 for the third consecutive game. And it almost felt like a case of deja vu in the early stages of Saturday's game, as our opening blitz at the Vitality was strikingly similar to the start we made at Selhurst Park in our opening league game of the season. Jesus once again looked feverishly hungry. Alexander Zinchenko played with personality and an assuredness that catches the eye, and Granit Xhaka continued to find himself in very advanced attacking positions. We took the lead then in the fifth minute with our first shot on goal and the first real chance of the encounter for either side. It was a long Aaron Ramsdale pass that was breathtakingly controlled by Jesus, who sent Chris Meffham to the floor, as he did to Johnny Evans on more than one occasion last weekend. Our new frighteningly informed Brazilian striker then set out on a mesmerising solo run, reminiscent of a Lionel Messi. Dribble. He played a beautiful reverse pass to Gabriel Martinelli, who was all of a sudden through on goal. And from a tighter angle, Bournemouth keeper Mark Travers saved low with his feet, only for the ball to fall nicely to our captain Martin Odegaard. Right place, right time. And the Norwegian slotted home his first Premier League goal of the new season. But what about that by a touch? That touch from Jesus was out of this world. Majestic. Beautifully constructed by Jesus, he pointed to the skies above and celebrated as if it was his own goal, and rightly so. Another goal involvement for both Jesus and Martinelli, who have both already struck up quite the lethal understanding, the two Brazilian men. Our dominance was then terrifyingly obvious from that moment onwards, and we deservedly doubled our lead in the 11th minute. Ben White was allowed time and space to drift inside, and our new-look right-back found Bukayo Saka, who was waiting and looking ominous on the right-hand side. White made a brilliant overlapping run and was fed by Saka. White's first-time cutback found an unmarked Jesus, who took a heavy touch and accidentally but thankfully set up Odegaard to smash home from pretty much the exact same position as his first. Two goals in the first 11 minutes, our first two shots on goal, first two chances, lethal, clinical and unstoppable from the Gunners. In my view then, Thomas Partey was exceptional and so classy throughout, while Zinchenko showed a real moment of class as he was being put under pressure by the Bournemouth strikers. And instead of rushing a predictable back pass with his weaker foot back to Ramsdale, the Ukrainian produced a confident piece of skill to take out the two strikers and set us on our way again. Well, there is nothing really to report until Saliba's goal in the 54th minute, and what a goal it was! Just before that, Gabriel had to be alert at the back to stoop low to clear a direct Bournemouth corner that was goal-bound. Bournemouth were ever so slightly coming back into the game at the beginning of the second half, and so Saliba's goal came at the perfect time. Martinelli, who was over on the right, following a cleared Arsenal corner, got to the byline and produced a decent cross, which fell all the way to Granit Xhaka, who was once again in a very attacking position. There didn't seem to be any real chance of us scoring, but Xhaka's pullback for Saliba caught everyone, including his own teammate Zinchenko, totally by surprise. An absolute worldie from Saliba, who knew exactly what he was doing. With his weaker left foot, the French centre-back curled a stunning strike over the head of Travers and into the top corner. And although his header passed his own goalkeeper last weekend wasn't the worst of finishes, it must have felt a little nicer for the youngster to score against the opposition this time round. And what a way to score your first Arsenal goal. Man of the match debut performance in our opening league game, and a potential goal of the season candidate in our third game. William Saliba, once again, take a bow. And well, Jesus was desperate to get in on the scoring act, and he found the net in the 71st minute. A world-class Odegaard through ball with the outside of his foot set Jesus away in on goal. Our number 9's lovely dinked finish was chalked off, though, for the tightest of offside calls you're likely to see all season. Nketiah, Smith-Rowe, Tierney, Tomiyasu and Sambi Lokonga all came on late on, and Jesus and Nketiah went close to adding gloss to the already comprehensive victory. Bournemouth only managed to create their first chance, a half chance at best. In the 78th minute, would you believe, Ramsdale had just the one save of note to make, and it was actually going wide. That summed it up, really. Fulham at home next Saturday, same kick-off time, which is quickly followed by the visit of Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa next Wednesday at 8:30pm. Well, Manchester City, of course, they were held by Newcastle 3-3 at St James's Park. What an enthralling encounter. Manchester City had a total of 21 shots on the Newcastle goal, 10 on target, and they enjoyed 70% of possession. But Newcastle found themselves 3-1 up, thanks to goals from Almiron. And of course, it was a spectacular free kick by Kieran Trippier. And well, what a moment. Callum Wilson had put Newcastle 2-1 up at half-time. Haaland got City back into it before City roared back. And well, dare I say, we are top of the table. Are we City's closest challengers? Liverpool have stuttered early on. But well, three games, three wins for Arteta's men, nine goals. Saliba and Jesus, arguably the two players of the Premier League season so far. I cannot wait for Fulham on Saturday. It finished at the Vitality. Bournemouth 0, Arsenal 3.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Now, feet. That's what we're talking about next. That's how the standards have slipped on this podcast. Did you know Peter Crouch, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Jack Butland and Fraser Forster all have size 12 feet?
That's amazing!
But we're not done there. Romelu Lukaku top trumps that with his size 13.5 feet. But the king of the football flippers is Nwankwo Kanu, who had size 15 feet. They were delivered on the back of a van by a forklift. Big feet, Dave. I'm a 12. What are you, a 10? You're a 10 and a half. You're trying to make yourself appear bigger. Are you like that with everything? He's just staring at me, chewing. What's new?
From Nepal to North London, from Delhi to Dagenham, from the terraces to the armchair, it's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
Arsene, will you leave?
Arsene, will you sign the contract?
Humiliated in Champions League, beaten by West Brom. Time to go, Arsene.
Arsene, did you see the planes?
Arsene, did you see the fans protest?
Arsene, did you see Arsene has no fans TV?
They say I'm foolish, they say I'm blind. The fans are just clueless, want me to resign. I could say screw them, and I could just sign. 'Cause I'm Arsene Wenger after all. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me. Oh, I look on social media. What do I see? Some utter f**kwits on AFTV. They want me to leave. But I'm Arsene Wenger after all, fam. I'm Arsene Wenger blood after all. Don't put your blame on me. And FYI, we're not family. Fam, idiot! Some people think I'm the problem. They want me out of the club. Some think I can't win the prem. I don't give a f**k. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. Don't put the blame on me. Put it on Alexi.
What?
You want my opinion? You know I won't lie. Some gooners are f**tards, just look in the sky.
I'm Arsene Wenger after all. I'm Arsene Wenger, hashtag respect all. Don't put the blame on me. Blame this RPG. Some people think I'm the problem. They want me out of the club. Some think I can't win the prem. I don't give a f**k. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. Don't put the blame on me. Put it on Alexi. I'm only human, I make mistakes. My ship's stuck again, oh for f**k's sake. Don't put the blame on me. Blame the kit company.
Hey,
I am for profit, not debt messiah. I will not spin to finish higher. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. I'm Arsene Wenger after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me.
Sacre bleu, sacre bleu. Oh, suck on that, fam. Suck on that blood. Do you get me? Do you get me, fam? Do you get me, blood?
So it's match day. You're nervous. Three quarters of a toilet roll later and a tin of something to calm you down. drink-wise, obviously. What do you do then? Have you a routine or habits that are hard to break? We have the top 10 fan rituals.
No!
Yes! What ones do you do? The top 10, we're going in reverse, from 10 down to 1. 10, eating or drinking the same thing pre-game. 9, walk or drive the same route to the ground. 8, keeping your eyes closed if your team has a penalty. We've all been there. 7, meeting at the same pub to have a pint. That's a given, isn't it? 6, watching at the same pub. It'd be rude not to. You can't take your patronage somewhere else, can you? 5, wearing your lucky shirt. That is essential. 4, always watching with the same people. Well, it's compulsory, isn't it? It's written in stone. 3, buying a programme. No, 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 sir. I don't buy programmes anymore. They're about £25, aren't they? 2, wearing the team scarf. I don't, but Dave does. Even if it's summer, Dave will have a scarf. Even if it's wrapped oddly round his wrist, he does all that. I always find that a bit weird, but Dave does that. And at the top of the pile, people, it's sitting in the same chair or seat. I always have the same seat in the lounge if I'm watching. Don't get the same choice in a pub. Don't get the same choice if I go to the Arsenal. But in the lounge, I am the king of all I survey.
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gun room. Just messing about, trying to avoid all the technical issues. With me, as always, are Mitch. How are you, Mitch?
Not too bad, thanks again.
And Jay. How are you doing, Jay?
All good.
Oh, it's looking pretty good at the minute, isn't it? Hey, pretty tasty. We'll get into the game and everything. We've got decorators in the gun room. Another layer of rust. They've just delivered some damp, so it's all looking good. Right, let's get on with... it's Michael Thomas's birthday, 55 today. Obviously, the legend that put us in the driving seat at Anfield in 89. Also, we've got one of the Lionesses has called it a day. Jill Scott has gone into retirement, so we'll give her a nod. What a great performance she did in the Euros. Steve Braddock, 1964 to 2022, Arsenal's head groundsman. We'll give him a nod as well because some of the pitches, honestly, like a snooker table, weren't they? And they still are. Right, 3 wins out of 3, 9 goals, 2 against, 2 points ahead of Man City and looking forward to the Europa League draw. Let's get to the Bournemouth game. Jay, what did you make of that performance?
Yeah, it was as good as I've seen it for quite a while. Just dominated. I mean, Bournemouth, they're nailed on to get relegated. They're terrible. I can't really see them picking up too many wins all season. They're really bad, but dominated the game. Loved so many aspects of the performance. Defensively looked strong. Again, Jesus looked irresistible at times. And, you know, Ødegaard, superb performance from me. All in all, you know what? Amazing. I think, you know, as comfortable as we're going to be this season, you know, I don't think we'll have as comfortable performance again. So, yeah, delighted.
If you come from Bournemouth, don't go sending us some stroppy emails on that. It's just Jay's opinion. He's entitled to it, okay? Mitch, how did you feel about it all?
I mean, not much to complain about the performance. A lot to like. We played absolutely wonderfully. I mean, you can't complain with a 3-0 win. I mean, I was watching with my friend and we're like, oh, we count a lot more. Like, we started so hot with 2 goals in 10 minutes that, like, only winning 3-0 was, like, a little bit disappointing because you're like, oh, it's the worst team in the league. Like, you can run it up. But, like, also, I mean, if we're at a point where we're complaining about not winning by enough, I think that's a really, really good spot for the club to be in.
Yeah, it's I like the fluidity. The movement, the passing, it was really, really sharp. And it reminded me of old Wenger ball. But his confidence is a big issue, isn't it, Jay? I mean, suddenly we're on a roll. But we should be cautious, shouldn't we? Maybe not this weekend, but we should be cautious down the line because there's a lot of going on about winning the Premier League and all this sort of stuff, giving everyone a run for their money. We haven't hit the big clubs yet.
No, I think we need to be cautious every week. You know, we need to guard against complacency. Obviously, we're not the finished article, not by a long way. And, you know, each game brings its own difficulties. You know, it's Fulham on Saturday evening and they've started the season well and they've got dangerous players who can cause us problems. So the team, they certainly don't give off the impression that complacency is going to be an issue just yet. You know, there's so many players that are chomping at the bit to get into the team. And you know, Arteta is, you know, is something we learn from All or Nothing, is he's just relentless, isn't he? And he's on top of the players so much that complacency, I don't think, will be an issue. So definitely think we can't be looking too far ahead. Just take each game as it comes at the minute. But we should all be just loving the fact that we've won our opening three games. You know, it's fantastic. You know, it's been, what is it? The last time we did it, what was it? Like, the Invincibles, maybe? I can't remember.
Yeah, Arsenal won their opening Premier League matches first time since 2004-2005, yeah. While they haven't named the same starting 11 since 2003-2004, which virtually picked itself.
Yeah, didn't. I knew the stat was flying around, and it's something to be enjoyed. We don't need to be looking too far ahead into the future at all. Just concentrate on the Fulham game.
Yeah, I think it's just that sort of measured optimism. Obviously, I'm loving what's going on and everything. The football is everything you dream about, isn't it? That sort of one-touch passing and moving, and the goals are sublime, so there's nothing to moan about. But it's just that, you know, there's so much going on and so much overhyping. And we do this on a regular basis. Mitch, what's your thoughts on that?
I think that most of it's kind of just in good fun, at least from my perspective. Like, I've seen people be like, oh, we're going on a title charge. Like, I think most people are being like somewhat in the same way that people were saying that we'd get relegated last season if we lost our first three matches. I think it's all just kind of like, it's banter. It's, I mean, I think it's like, you know, we've won our first three matches. Yeah, it's not against like the hardest teams in the league, but also I think that if you're unwilling to celebrate your wins, what's the point of being a fan? Like, if you're going to win the first three games of the season, you're going to be all down in the dumps about it. Like, oh, it was against these teams. Like, then what's the point? Like,
well, you can only play they put in front of you, can't you? So
exactly. We that's our schedule. We've won our schedule. We'd be complaining more if we lost. So why would we complain if we celebrate when we win? So it's really great that we've won our first three matches. Long may it continue. But it won't continue forever. We're not going invincible this season. That was never in the question. And we probably won't be in a title charge. But, you know, why not have fun while we're playing well?
I think that's the reason I brought it up, because people are going, oh, we're going to go the whole season unbeaten and, you know, win a cup and all that sort of thing. So that's why I slung it in there. But I am over the moon, as they say. It's the old cliche. Bring the old cliches out. Odegaard has come in for some stick lately, but he ran the game for me. A really strong performance in a series of strong performances, Jay.
Yeah, he was superb. I mean, he's been a bit quieter, I suppose, in the opening couple of games, but he's so good on the ball and like he's an integral part of the team. You know, it was great to see him score, and he was getting into some great positions. He's obviously captain now, but he's going to be absolutely key to all the good things that we do this season. And it would be great for him, you know, confidence as well going forward. And he got a couple of goals away from home, which I know some people were, or I've seen on Twitter, especially, you know, there's certain people were chirping up how, you know, maybe doesn't turn up away from home as much as he does at the Emirates. But great to see him get on the score sheet. And I mean, he's such a good player, isn't he? You know, he's delightful to watch, you know, technically superb. And, you know, there were parts of the game, especially in that first half, where down that right hand side, Saka and Odegaard were connecting, and Ben White was getting in, weren't they? On that, and it was like reminiscing of the good parts of last season, where we were getting a lot of joy down that right hand side. So it was good to see that starting again. He's such a top player, and I think he's gonna as the season goes on. I think other teams, you know, because I think we are going to have a better season than we had last season. I think other teams and I think the media are going to pick up on just how good a sort of a number 10 Odegaard is. And I think that they're going to realise, because I think he's sort of flown under the radar a little bit when it comes to the media. You know, he's never really talked about too often, or I certainly don't see it. But I think this season he's going to make a lot. Odegaard's going to make a lot of these pundits. And I think the media take notice, and because I think he's going to have a great season.
Mitch, let's get to the goal. Fifth minute. We've praised Jesus, but that first goal was a thing of absolute beauty, wasn't it? The elegance and the determination and appetite from that player. He gives us a different edge. Talk us through it.
He's just a fantastic, fantastic player. Like, I don't think there's enough good things that we can say about Gabriel Jesus. Takes the ball on, like, I think from a longer pass, and then just turns someone and just does his thing, dribbles through a bunch of players, finds Martinelli, who takes the shot out into the middle of the goal, and just instinctually Odegaard finishes it. Really great goal. I love that we're getting a lot of players in the box. I think that's really big, especially someone like Odegaard, who we've seen some issues with his shooting time a couple times. So it's nice to see him both in the first goal and the second goal, in and around the box, in those areas where the balls can kind of come out to him and he can get a shot. And we've seen that both with him and Xhaka's goals this season, where they've been in dangerous areas in the box. And it's allowed them to get on the ball in those dangerous situations and score goals just instinctually. So, really, really great stuff from Jesus. Good stuff from Martinelli and great stuff from Odegaard.
Odegaard, number two, nicked off the toe of the magical Jesus. I thought they were both going to collide and fall over. But he really showed determination, didn't he? Because most people probably would have left it for Jesus. That's for you, Joe. Just trying to catch him out a bit.
Yeah, he swept it home like you would have expected Jesus to. So yeah, lovely finish. Good work on that right hand side as well. And I mean, at that point we were absolutely coasting, because Bournemouth, they were so poor that, you know, we have to make them look poor, and we were completely controlling the game. Even when we lost possession, we were so quick to gain possession back, weren't we? I was really impressed on the day with how quickly we worked and pressed and won the ball back. And you know what? Lovely, lovely finish from Odegaard. Swept it home like Bergkamp-esque into that back of the net.
Steady on, sir. Steady on. Mitch, it was great because it was it Ben White that whipped that ball in? Nice, low, sharp. I like it when Ben White starts playing the ball out, because he is a baller, isn't he? You could put him in sort of defensive midfield even. He can play a pass, he can even have a shot. What did you make of his performance?
I think this was his best right back performance offensively since the start of the season. I think that still, like, the Palace game is probably his best performance so far, just because he was able to he's the only right back this season that's been able to stop Zaha from doing anything. And so his defensive performances have been really solid. We finally saw him getting up the pitch more and able to put those balls in. Really, really good stuff from Ben White. And great instinct by Odegaard to just get on the ball and take that shot.
Right, let's talk about that third goal. That was just the cherry on the cake, wasn't it? Love the chant as well. That was fantastic. Talk us through that goal, Jay. I mean, it was like a striker's goal. And an angry Frenchman with it. I love it.
Yeah, it was a deep cross from Martinelli over on the right-hand side, and he put it to the back post, and Xhaka teed up a oncoming Saliba, and it was a first-time finish. And I mean, the camera angle was perfect, wasn't it? You could see, you know, ball went straight into the back of the net. And it was great to see the whole squad celebrating with him, because obviously there was the own goal last week. But technically, executed the shot perfectly. And I mean, he's been a revelation, hasn't he, Saliba? I don't think anybody expected him to be this good. I mean, maybe there's a few people that watched him quite a bit last season for Marseille, but I certainly didn't. And I don't, you know, the term like a new signing is just, you know, it's made for Saliba, because he's been incredible. We just need him to sign that contract, don't we? Get an extension.
Well, there's rumours that it's going to be after the summer transfer window. They're doing all their ducking and diving and trying to fill that in. But I love the bit, Mitch, where he kind of slid over on his knee. The old typical knee slide. Now it's done every week by everybody, isn't it? I did it on the carpet as well when he scored. But it's that angry Frenchman sort of standing there, sort of looking at the crowd on his knees. I love all that sort of stuff. And do you think he's going to be within a season one of the best central defenders in the league?
I think he totally has that ability to be that. I think I think the word that we've seen the most around Saliba has been his aura, which is something that has only been accredited to Van Dijk for the most part, where he's just like this huge, like menacing, like presence. And he's quick. He's hard to get by. He's a huge dude. Like he has the physical tools, and we've seen what he can do both in League One and is in his very short Premier League career so far. I mean, he's a very, very exciting player. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he could be one of the best center backs in a couple of years in the league, but we'll just have to wait and see. Still a young player, and still likely has a lot of developing to do, but he is really, really good.
Right, let's tip our family off, the podcast family. If you're listening to the audio version, the full unedited version of the Gun Room is now available on YouTube, where you can see us all in our undiluted splendor. Get involved by email, say hi, ask a question, or pass a comment. It's an Arsenal thing, 4@gmail.com. Right, let's cover some of those stats for that match. 6 shots for Bournemouth, 14 for Arsenal. 1 shot on target for Bournemouth, 6 for Arsenal. 41% possession for Bournemouth and 59% for Arsenal. Last one, 411 passes, 580 for Arsenal. It tells its own story, doesn't it, really? Brutal dominance. And I think we could have got 2 or 3 more at least. 4th goal was disallowed. No. What did you make of that? It was like a gnat's dick, wasn't it? It was a hairline thing. When you see other games as well, I just don't understand it. Wenger said in conversation, you've got to be obviously offside, but it's shoelaces and studs and fingernails. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, like you said, you described it perfectly. It was super close. We saw one in the Man United-Liverpool game for Rashford's goal where he was, I mean, that's as tight as it gets, and they gave that one. So there's still, it's open to debate and interpretation, isn't it? So we lost out on that one. However, VAR's been kind to us this season, hasn't it, on a number of occasions already. So
yeah.
Luckily, we were already 3-0 up at the time, so, yeah.
Right then, let's do man of the match. Mitch?
I think Martin Odegaard is the easy choice, scores 2 goals. I mean, that's an easy way to be man of the match. But I think, like, Saliba and Jesus, all great shouts for that as well.
Jay?
Yeah, Saliba for that goal. Just, what a goal. And a chant as well. It was just perfect, wasn't it? You know, the chant developed, you know, in the first half. What was it, 15 minutes straight? And then he pops up with that goal. So, yeah, man of the match for me.
He must be loving life at the moment. I just can't pick a man of the match because there were some really outstanding performances.
Zinchenko, though, you know, we haven't mentioned him. Zinchenko was superb, absolutely.
Let's go to him, Jay, interestingly enough, because he's in that left sort of fullback position. But it's curious, isn't it? Because he kind of drifts all over the show. He's like, you often find him in that game sort of percolating around the middle. I wonder if that's something Arteta has sort of said, get involved on the left, but spread the ball about. Beautiful player as well.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think you can do that against weaker opposition. You know, it's not like he was pinned back at all. You know, when the games start coming thick and fast and when we start coming up against teams that are slightly better offensively, you know, Tierney might come in and whatever. But I mean, what a start to his career. He's just, you know, he's slotted in so well when he's technically so good on the ball and irresistibly good. He's so, so strong. And I'm sure we'll probably see him in the middle at some point. But at the moment, you know, you wouldn't take him out of the left side of defence, would you? You wouldn't, unless there's an issue or an injury or whatever. So Tierney's going to have to wait a little while to get some game time. But obviously the games are going to come thick and fast, aren't they? As from, you know, pretty much next week when we start playing midweek. So, yeah, delighted. I mean, what a signing. What a great signing. Great signing.
Mitch, what I like about him is he's a mopper-upper, but he soon turns the ball around and gets us going again, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a really great player in terms of, like, dynamics to add to the team because he's just shifted a lot of it naturally just by being in it. Because he operates a lot differently than Tierney. I think we were saying something similar or I heard a lot of people saying something similar when Tavares was coming into the team in his early run when Tierney was injured at the beginning of the year, where he was offering a little something that was a little more variety than Kieran Tierney. He was cutting inside into the channel. He would also go outside like Tierney to put a cross in. But I think sometimes Tierney can be a little bit one-dimensional when it comes to his attacking play. Zinchenko is very, very hard to track. And I feel like, I mean, our left side has been clearly more dominant so far to start the season. And he's been a big part of that because his dynamics are very effective. He rotates really well with Xhaka. He pops up in that half space. He will rotate out wide with Martinelli. Like, you're seeing all three of these players kind of rotate and pop up in different areas, which as a defense makes it very, very hard to track. You can't man mark our team because of how fluid everyone is. And that's not just the left side. That's the right side too, with Odegaard and with Saka. And then Jesus also plays a role where he's swapping positions with Martinelli and all that. Our team has just become a lot more fluid with these two additions. And, you know, a little bit of what I was saying last week, where it's like, I wonder if Pep's system kind of restricted them too much because of like how strict the positional play system can be. And I know Arteta also kind of carries that philosophy, but it's clear that there's a little bit more freedom in the roles as opposed to what they had at Man City.
Yeah, a bit more of that go out and enjoy yourself mentality. Saliba, just throw that in. Right, should we do some emails?
We just got an email. We just got an email. We just got an email. I wonder who it's from.
Guess what, chaps? John's back. John is back. Season three, we've got John back. So he says, I see the Muppets are back, plus one. Your token Scouser didn't exactly sound excited at the prospect of landing Arteta as manager on the end of the season pod. For your information, he spent around 400 million on failure. That was in capital letters. To fail to reach the Champions League and barely get us into the top four. How long does this guy get before we upgrade where it's really needed?
So my prediction is that John did not think we would be in the running for Champions League at the beginning of the season and would have said that I don't know what an expectation of someone who just like hates his own club so much would be. I don't know what to say to this guy. I don't know.
I'm glad he's back. But you actually said...
Thanks for listening, John.
Yeah, thanks. Don't listen too often. Don't send too many emails. I can't cope. It stresses me out. I have to go walking around the garden, pacing it off before I come on. You said it before about expectations on the end of season pod, Jay. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's coming from because last season... Sorry, viewers, we're going back and listeners... but I wasn't expecting much. We did actually say that we would come fourth. Mm-hmm. And we said we'd snap one another's arm off for that. So I just don't get it.
No, I think we need to track John's IP address and match it with Rich and see.
You reckon they're one and the same?
I reckon he's double agent. Like, come on.
Is it you, Rich? Is it you?
No, and these people need to... put their predictions, like pin it to their Twitter profile with the date and then, you know, stick to that as the season goes on. Because, I mean, yeah, it was disappointing to miss out on the Champions League last year. We were all absolutely gutted, the players included. But, I mean, like we said many times, all three of us, if you couldn't see improvement last season in many areas of the team and the club and the fan base and you know, the club was in... The team and the club was in such a disjointed way that there were so many aspects, not just transfers, but so many things that Mikel needed to do, the coaching team needed to do. They had to build confidence back up, and it was the youngest team in the league. Everyone, you know, well documented, youngest team in the league, and there were going to be rough patches in the season, and they were rough, and we all experienced it, but we all also could see that there'd been improvement there. And then you go into this season and you know, pre-season was immense. And we looked, you know, it wasn't just the results, but the performances that we were putting in mirrors what we've done in the Premier League. You know, that it's continued this good feeling and this the fluidity that we've all mentioned so often. That started in pre-season and for it to carry on in the Premier League is just incredible. And I think with this team, they're such a likeable group that the fan base, you know, there's not many in that squad that you would openly criticise for red card or whatever, or the fans aren't getting on the players' backs anymore. You know, it wasn't that long ago, Giroud would get a hammer in, or Xhaka would get a hammer in, or somebody in the squad, Mesut or whatever, there'd be a scapegoat somewhere, but that's not happening now. And that's all down to the coaching staff and obviously performances and stuff. But why are you even watching the game? Why are you following the team?
Well, I've got to stick up for Rich at the moment because he's not here, but we'll get him back on at some stage because he has that sort of pithy, spiky balance, doesn't he? Well, it makes the world a richer sort of and bright place. No pun intended, Rich.
I feel like I haven't really heard much from people who are like Arteta out or Edu out. Like, I feel like it's been pretty quiet for a while now. Like, we've made good signings. We've like, there's people that like just like to be mad about things and just, I don't know. Like, I'm at the point where I just don't really care. Like, if I see people that are like really, really being negative in a time where it does not make sense for them to be negative just because they're trying to drive their own agendas, like, I'm just muting or blocking them. Like, I don't care about hearing about it.
Right. Here's a good one from Steve-O. Basically, the heading is it time to make up with the Cronkies, kiss and make up with the Cronkies? The Cronkies era hasn't always been great. Poorly run club with dire recruitment. But over the last few years, the owner has shown his commitment to the club in funding new players. Is it time we embraced KSC and the Cronky ownership? Steady on. There's a hot potato. Jay.
I think it's well past that time.
Well, I think that question has to be, it's a little bit too early for that. I think they've invested in the team. But for me, I'm not as, well, obviously, Mitch, you think it is. But for me, that's the question that should be asked. You know, because for me, we're still at the very beginning of Kroenke's sole ownership of the club. And you know, this is still early days. And the Super League, you know, wasn't that long ago. And, you know, I think it was a very obvious thing. You know, all the clubs that were interested, that signed up for the Super League, easy way to get the fans back on board is to throw a load of cash at the club and then transfer window, you know, and like Man United, for example, and us, we've spent a lot of money. That being said, you can't fault them recently. They've been good. Josh has been involved, and that's what we wanted. You know, obviously, he wasn't involved in the early stages of KSE's involvement with the club, going back to right, you know, when Usmanov was involved and Silent Stan and all of that. But Josh has been very upfront, you know, and he's been involved and he's listened and he says the right things. But for me, it's a little bit early to give an answer for that, because this needs to continue for the next 5, 6, 7 years. And then you can make a judgment.
I probably agree with you, Jay. It is early days, but we're going in the right direction. And I've got to give them credit where they deserve it, which is they've put their money where their mouth is. Mitch?
I think that I've been critical of the Kroenkes in the past, but I think that it's very clear that they know what they're doing. Like, they know how to run sports franchises. That's abundantly clear. The Rams and Avalanche have won titles in the last calendar year. Like, the Kroenkes know how to run a sports franchise, and I think they've made their errors, but they also have also like apologized for something like the Super League. And like, it wasn't like a half-assed, like, here's a like Notes app-esque apology. Like, Josh has done like a lot of work to try to appease like everything that's happened since the Super League, and they've admitted that mistake. They've tried to fix it, and I think that they clearly know the direction that they want the club to go in. I think that it's normal for fans to be skeptical, especially when fans come from or when the owners come from a different country than the fans, most of the fans are. I understand that can be the case, but the Kroenkes know what they're doing. They aren't just like buying Arsenal as like a money dumping scheme. Like that was never going to be the case. Like they want to win championships. That's why they own sports teams. And they've successfully done that with three of their teams this year. The Nuggets are still very good, and the other teams are still very good. Like they want to have successful teams. And I think that Arsenal's in the process of doing exactly that.
I tell you what has got better, and they've learned from the PR machine, especially with All or Nothing and the community work they're doing, and No More Red. That was a good campaign. So I think they've really pulled their socks up from that point of view, because Arsenal haven't been the best at connecting with the fans. And now with Arteta and Edu and all the rest of them, it seems to be a more rounded package. And that does count for the feel-good factor for the fans in the stadium. I mean, I don't think I'd have to go back to when Wenger was in situ and we were the Invincibles to generate that type of atmosphere. But I think this is even better. Jay?
Yeah, I just think, I mean, I don't disagree with anything Mitch just said. However, I think things have got to fall into place as well. You've got to be quite lucky in you know, that I don't believe for one second that they had this big master plan to bring in Edu and Arteta and put them together, and because we know how to run football clubs or sports franchises or whatever. You know, you have to be quite fortunate. You know, it's not just down to them. Ultimately, you want an ownership model is visible, but they don't really take that much control of the day-to-day running of the club, because that's what you employ people to do, don't you? You bring in people like Edu who's worked, obviously played for the club, worked with Wenger, experienced, gone away to Brazil and he comes back and he's doing a great job. You know, you've got Arteta who has taken, you know, it's taken time, but now he's got what he wants, and the whole managerial model of the club is now is one, and it's taken, you know, the Kroenkes were in charge when it wasn't like that, you know, and they appointed these people. They appointed Emery. They appointed Gazidis, or, you know.
How much do you think they were badly advised, though, Jay? Do you think they were getting whispers from people who knew this kind of football world, and they said, "Oh, this Raul, he's a wizard. Get him in."
You know, Raul for a period in time was Don Raul, and he was like the greatest. You know, for a period of time, he was a big fan. You know, the fan base loved him, and he didn't work out. And Gazidis, you know, when he came in, he said all the right things, and then quickly left for Milan. And you know, the Kroenkes were involved then. You know, I'm not saying they're not doing well now, and they are doing better, but I think they've made some good appointments, they made some bad appointments, but I think it's still too early.
It is quite incredible, Mitch, isn't it? But success and sort of progress, as that scene, it kind of dissolves all that negativity towards the Kroenkes, doesn't it?
It's way easier to be mad at your owners when you're not doing well. There's a reason that when Manchester United lost their first two games, that's when they're pulling out the Norwich scarves for their game against Liverpool. Like, it's way easier to be like, to find something to blame. And granted, I do think that like the Glazers are not a good ownership for Manchester United. There's still change that needs to be made there. And like, rightfully so, with all the protests that were happening about the Kroenkes around the Super League and any times prior, were both during times in which Arsenal was not playing well and the club was making decisions that the fans did not align with. And so in those situations, the fans are more than in their rights to be wanting their owner out of there, to want major change to the club. And I think it tends to happen when your team does well, you'll look over certain things. Like, I mean, Roman Abramovich is a good example where, like, he brought a lot of success to Chelsea. Was he a good person? No, but a lot of fans were willing to look past that because their club was doing well. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's hard to have a lot of, like, ethics and when it comes to ownership nowadays. And Kroenke is better than most when it comes to that. And you know, it's something you have to take as a sports fan, where if you're going to have someone who's filthy rich by your team, you're going to have some hangups with certain things. And you know, when the team does well, it's very easy to overlook it. And when the team's doing poorly, it's very hard to overlook it. And so, I think,
Mitch, as well, there was a kind of misunderstanding, because I think you're right. The Cronkies can run a sporting franchise, but the problem was, I don't think they understand the fan mentality and what they were getting into with the Premier League and the expectations of Arsenal fans, the history and everything else. Josh has made a big effort to try and tap into that history. And that's been a problem for them. They haven't connected. They are now. So it's all good. You know,
I think that's something that the Cronkies would agree with you on. Like I've listened to interviews with Josh where he said, oh yeah, we didn't realize like how, because sports fan bases in the US are vastly different from sports fan bases in the UK. The Premier League is nowhere near what US fan bases are like. The Premier League fan bases just naturally are more fickle and are much more resistant to change than almost any other league in the world. And so that's something that I don't think the Cronkies realize. And I think it's something they admitted to not realizing. And Josh is, you know, like you were saying, has made huge strides to understand the fan base, to connect with Arsenal fans, and to want to be like a part of the fan base in a way to truly understand what our gripes with the club are at any point in time.
Right. Let's just get our podcast family. If you want to join in this debate, if you want to tell us what you feel about the Cronkies, because it is a very passionate, emotional kind of thing. It's an Arsenal thing for @gmail.com. We look forward to your comments. Right. I've got three things left. First, we're going to ask you this tricky question that Dave came up with. Van Persie or Anelka, Jay?
If you were to look at the team now, what we need most, if we could have one of those two, I would go with Anelka. And I mean, Van Persie was class, don't get me wrong, but I think we've got slightly similar players to him. If they were both lined up in front of me, I'd take Anelka, definitely.
Mitch, we know that it's a bit beyond you, this one, because you were a sort of glimmer in your dad's eye, weren't you, at this sort of stage when
think I was born when Anelka was playing for Arsenal, because he played in the 90s, right? I was not born yet. I'm not qualified to answer this question.
Well, I think we should be rather critical of your parents, really, not getting busy. Right, let's go for the transfer news. Neto, 22, Wolves, 50 million. Do we press ahead or not? Jay?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a quality player. Class. It'd be a class signing.
What, even at 50 million?
I think if we've got the money, it's not my money, it's not your money. If the money's there, yeah, go and get him. He would instantly make the squad better. He's been consistently really good for a good couple of years, and he would offer us another great attacking element to the team. So absolutely go and get him.
Mitch?
Yeah, for sure. Pepe is going off to Nice, according to reports, and we have needed someone to fill in to play and take some of the load off Bukayo Saka for a while. He has played far too many minutes, and we need to slow his load a lot more. And having a really, really talented player like Pedro Neto will be huge, because he is a really, really good player. Still only 22. He's yet to kind of have his like true breakout, I think. But I think most people who have watched him know that he's a really, really good player. Really good at making stuff happen. I think he'd be an excellent signing even for that price. I mean, if we're seeing some of the prices that are being quoted for other players, like Antony from Ajax is being quoted around 90 million for Man United, and like that's absurd. Like I would be like, I think Neto is more deserving of that price tag than Antony is. And if we could somehow get him for that much, that would be an excellent deal for us.
What about Tielemans?
Again, if he makes us better, you know, he's somebody that is an upgrade on, say, an Elneny, or he's somebody that can come in, won't need any time to adapt to the league, And I think he could be a good addition. Wages I'm not bothered about. And you know, you expect maybe one or two more to leave as well, like Maitland-Niles and Bellerin. You know, that'll be another decent amount weekly wage gone. So I would go and get him, you know. I mean, if we ended the window with Neto and Tielemans, I mean, what would you rate that window out of 10? You'd have to say, you know, 8.5, 9, wouldn't you? From an incoming point of view,
pretty sure 10.
Yeah, like, that's what I mean. Yeah, you'd be going towards 10. That's a great window. So if it can, I mean, Leicester aren't in a great position, are they? So he'd be a great addition.
Well, they're talking about Bellerin's contract just being cut. So that could be. I like the Pepe move as well. Get him out on loan. It's a league that he knows. If he does good, then the price goes up a little bit, doesn't it? So we could flog him off. Right, the last one, you'll be glad to know, and you lot podders. Fulham is the next game up at the Emirates. Predictions, Jay? What sort of game do you see it being?
Yeah, they've started well, haven't they? Mitrovic is a handful. It's a big, horrible, smelly striker, so he'll do well. And it were going to be a test for Saliba again, but
how close have you got to him, Jay? How do you know he smells like that?
we should win. We should win. We're at home, and the atmosphere will be great because you know, Saturday evening. I'm going to go 3-0 home win.
Mitch, over to you. Fulham.
I don't think I'm as cavalier because I think they are. They've shown at the beginning of the season to be a lot better than Bournemouth, but we are at home. We are the better team, but you know, that's why you play the game. So I think it'll be a solid game. I think I'll go with 2-0 or 2-1.
I'm gonna go a bit bonkers again. I think we're gonna have too much for them, and I think we're gonna run them ragged. And I think they will get a goal. I think it'll be 4-1. I'm gonna go for that, chaps. It's been absolutely brilliant again. Thanks for your time. And I'll see you on the next one.
Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard. Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard!
The BBC issued an apology on their news channel after a trainee typed in a strap, you know, the strap that runs along the bottom of your TV, which read Manchester United are rubbish. Well, you've got to give him 10 out of 10 for observational skills, haven't you, really? What about Portsmouth? They hold the record for having the FA Cup for the longest period of time, which is 7 years, despite only winning it once in that time. This was because they won it in 1939 and there was no professional football during the war. Likewise, Italy held the World Cup between 1934 and 1950, 16 years or 4 tournaments, having only won it twice in that time. It's hard to think of a worse prank in football other than Balotelli's kippers in his Maserati. That registered the 25 on the Daveometer for grossness. However, this should push it further. Former Newcastle right-back Andy Griffin once left a caterpillar cake-sized turd in the fridge that he shared with teammate Bradley Orr. Orr and Griffin played together at Newcastle in the early years of their respective careers and, oddly enough, are still best friends.
Eddie and Catcher, a number 14 who finds the back of the net. Yeah, he's cool and laid back, and you can definitely bet your house or your shirt on Eddie and Catcher.
That's it, we're all done here. My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Bald Gooner. While you're there, check out Mitch at Mitch Piotta and look up his blogs at Pain in the Arsenal. You can cozy up with Connor at ConnorJack2 on the Twitterverse and Paul is at PMacCap. Look up Lauren on LaurenD2710. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon DC, Let's Be Arsenal FC, which is twin to the podcast. Also, check out Arse Devils for opinion and news on all things Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question or take part in the show? It's an ArsenalThing4@gmail.com. More importantly, a big heartfelt thank you to you guys out there for all your emails, your encouragement, your support, whether you watch or listen. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this, North London is red.
We'll have.